The Precinctor Raider Weekly Miniatures News Podcast is brought to you by Zero Dark Sci-Fi Skirmish Gaming in a Fallen Earth. You can find Zero Dark from Wargame Vault. Just go to wargamevault.com and search for Zero Dark.
It's Friday, the 28th of August, 2020. My name is Roby Jenkins, and this is the news.
The news.
First up, congratulations to Tabletop Fix and longtime blogger Falk. TT Fix is 10 years old this week, and Falk has kept it updated pretty much daily, every day, for 10 years. If you don't subscribe to Tabletop Fix, which is ttfix.blogspot.com, I cannot recommend it highly enough as a source of tabletop news. The one rule there is that he doesn't do GW news. It's not that he has anything against GW, but not having GW news, which, let's face it, doesn't really need a signal boost, means that news about other companies and manufacturers can be seen more clearly. I really respect that. He doesn't do commentary, review, or judgment. He just does the news. And I respect that too. Moving on, Cool Mini or Not's Massive Darkness 2 Kickstarter campaign has concluded, raising $3.8 million in funding, beating the first game's funding figure of $3.5 million. As a point to note, Massive Darkness 1 launched in April 2016 with an estimated delivery of April 2017, and the campaign was 100% fulfilled by September 2017. Look forward to seeing if Cool Mini or Not can match that with this new version of the game. By contrast, Core Clash, a game of giant robot combat that draws heavily on classic and modern Transformers aesthetics, has successfully funded at only $46,000, scraping past its funding goal. It's interesting that it hit full funding within 48 hours and then pretty much stayed there for the rest of its campaign. On the theme of giant robot board games, New Osaka has met its very modest Kickstarter funding goal of $6,000 with a couple of weeks left to run. This is a brand new project from a brand new company and truly fulfills the spirit of a Kickstarter, so I wish them the very best. And in a week that clearly wants me to buy more giant robots, Galaxy Hunters is halfway to its £60,000 goal with another mech-themed mercenary game with some problematic aspects in its theme of hunting and killing invasive mutants on behalf of ultra-powerful corporations. However, what these news items have in common, other than they're all on Kickstarter, although we'll be sure to talk about that too, is that they are all what's called a miniatures board game. And I'm going to unpack this concept this week in the discussion.
The discussion.
When did miniatures board games become a thing exactly? I mean, it seems obvious to point at the traditional charms of Monopoly as a starting point, but I struggle to think of a game when I was growing up that had anything in it I would call a miniature. There were collectible chess sets, I suppose. Otherwise, I remember the diving man in Mousetrap, and that's about it. In Cluedo, the characters were at best cardboard standees and usually just cheap conical pawns. I suppose Risk could put its hand up, but I'm not sure that the little figures of infantry and artillery were ever really a draw to that game. I suppose if I'm going to talk about origins, we should define our terms. It seems unlikely that you've not come across one if you're listening to this, but for the purposes of this episode, and frankly forever, I consider a miniatures board game to be a tabletop game with, surprise, surprise, a board, miniatures, and, this is important, digital movement. Digital movement is as opposed to analog movement. If I can move 7 inches or 6¼ inches or 5/8 of an inch, then I've got analog movement. But if I have to move on a grid of some kind, be it a square or hex-based or between defined zones of a board, then I've got digital movement. Once you need a tape measure to make the game work, it's a miniatures war game. Otherwise, it's a board game. So, it's also implied but not essential, that the miniatures are both thematically relevant to the game, which would count out Monopoly, and aesthetically appealing, which would count out Risk. The first miniatures board game I can really remember noticing was Blood Bowl. Feel free to remind me of others. Battletech was arguably a miniatures board game, and I remember the troll games that Games Workshop made, although I never played one. But once they were out there, we had HeroQuest, Space Crusade, Space Hulk. The first two might technically have been Milton Bradley games, but let's be honest, they were all Games Workshop through and through. But despite these, for a long time, board games and miniatures games were really seen as separate ventures, and for a good reason. Cost. In an entirely unscientific poll, I asked my wife at what point she thought a board game was getting expensive. She was a good person to ask because she's not a hobbyist, but because of me, she's familiar with the wider world of board games and occasionally buys them for me as a present, which is nice. And her answer definitely surprised me. For her, a board game is getting expensive at £40. I think you will agree this is a low bar. But she explained that below £20, she expects a pretty cheap, simple product she could play with children. Between £20 and £40, she expects a more sophisticated game like Catan, Ticket to Ride, or Pandemic. But beyond £40, she expects a complexity of components that means the game is getting into hobbyist territory. In other words, I would enjoy it, but she probably wouldn't. Suffice to say, miniatures board games are all comfortably above this bar. In most cases, way above this bar. Miniatures board games tend to start at around £70 and rise to as high as £400 with Kingdom Death Monster. I think this tells us something important about the markets at which miniatures board games are being pitched. They aren't trying to attract the purchases of high street retail board games. They aren't even competing with the likes of Monopoly or Cluedo or Hungry Hungry Hippos. Despite being board games, they aren't operating in anything remotely like this market. Miniatures board games are aimed squarely at the likes of you and me. We are already on board with miniatures as we use them in war games or roleplay games. We are used to rulebooks with a spine and possibly a hard cover. We are highly attracted to narrative-led tabletop experiences, and most of all, we demonstrably have disposable income to spend. Plus, we are all occupying a world in which the fastest diminishing resource seems to be not oil, but leisure time. A good miniatures board game fulfills our conscious needs for cool minis and reduces the time between unboxing and playstarting to less than an hour. Well designed, they also offer replayability on a substantial level. And these are all good things, so why do you get the sense that maybe I'm not 100% on board with the exponential growth in miniatures board games? Well, I have a few issues. First, let's talk about price. The argument is pretty solid that you can spend, say, £100 on a big box miniatures board game and get everything you need ready to play right out of the box. You can paint the minis if you want to, but you don't have to. They're pre-assembled more often than not, and the game is right there, ready to go. No scenery to build, no enormous table required, no days and days of assembly and painting to get your army together. It sounds like a no-brainer. And yet, how often do these games actually get table time from the average player? It's not an easy question to answer, but based on my own experience of both buying and observing the buyers of these games, I think up to about half a dozen plays is a pretty good run for most of these games. After that, they go back on the shelf or onto eBay to pass on. And if your outlay for these is £80 to £100, the return on your investment isn't looking great. Although, admittedly, if you sell it and recoup 50 to 60% of the original outlay, it does look a lot better. So let's talk about the miniatures. These are often lovely. There are a lot of examples of games I want to own just for the miniatures. Human Interface, Nakamura Tower, Kingdom Death Monster, and Horizon Zero Dawn are all games I have little interest in, but the minis for which I'd love to have in my collection. But you can't just buy the miniatures in the majority of cases. It's an all-or-nothing deal, and this speaks to the nature of why miniatures are included in these games, as a marketing device. If they were to sell the miniatures without the game, fewer people would buy the game. If they developed a game without miniatures, fewer people would buy the game. If they just developed the miniatures and didn't bother with the game, fewer people would buy the miniatures. I've spoken before about how miniatures companies use games to sell minis, but the miniatures board game is the purest manifestation of this in action. The miniatures are there to justify the inflated price, and the game is there to justify the miniatures. Now, I'm not saying the games aren't good. Some of them are among the finest and most imaginative games ever devised, but there is a meta game taking place in which the buyers are being manipulated. And on that note, let's talk about FOMO. The fear of missing out has become one of this generation's catchphrases, and this is what drives sales of miniatures board games, and is why companies like Command still use Kickstarter despite the 10% fee and despite the fact that they are easily big enough to launch games independently. Games that appear on Kickstarter are ephemeral experiences. The game is only at this price for Kickstarter, or might only be available on Kickstarter. Infinity Defiance, I'm looking at you. The campaign may include exclusive miniatures or early access to expansions. Bizarrely, even the experience of backing the Kickstarter and then being one of the many excited, anxious backers waiting to receive your copy and being frustrated when it misses the shipping target again, or retailers seem to be putting your game on their shelves before you've received your Kickstarter edition box, this all becomes part of the experience that others fear to miss out on. I'm not at all sorry to have missed out on the Robotech Tactics Kickstarter, but there's no denying that those who did back it have formed a community built upon the foundations of their shared hate for Palladium games. I'm not saying I don't like miniatures board games, but I am saying that gamers should be honest with themselves about what they're going to do with their investment. How often will they really get it onto the table? How many times will you be able to gather five friends together over the course of several weeks to make it through that immersive campaign you were so excited about? Pure miniatures war games, as I may have mentioned last week, aren't just about the game. The collecting, assembly, and painting of the miniatures is a hobby in itself, and one you can indulge without pressure to play, because, well, you can't until you're finished anyway. The research, the background, the history, the fiction, the art, they all fill out and round off the hobby beyond the tabletop. You can enjoy miniatures war game with hours of well-filled time without ever rolling a die or even meeting eye to eye with another human being. I guess I worry a little that the growth of the miniatures board game is causing wargamers to forget that their hobby isn't a pursuit of instant gratification. Ours is a slower, more considered hobby. So, by all means, back a miniatures board game on Kickstarter, or pick one up from your local game store. But you should try to make sure that you see the game itself as an adjunct to the whole experience. Paint your minis, make some custom terrain or objective markers, rediscover the war game in your miniatures board game. You'll get a much better return on your investment.
Precinct Omega.
Now, the reason I found myself this week thinking about miniatures board games is balls. Specifically, it's Ball Monsters. Back in 2018, I bought the intellectual property rights to the Ball Monsters from Macrocosm Miniatures, and it was very much my starting point for Precinct Omega. And yet, despite that, I've still not finished writing a game for the miniatures that I really enjoy. Every version of the game has come out too restrictive, too serious, too wargamey. I wanted to make it a game that young gamers could find accessible and fun and that would make people laugh. But every version I've written has come to make people frown. Not because it's not fun, but because you still have to think just a bit too hard about your moves. If you've not seen the Bull Monsters, do get along to precinctomega.co.uk and check out the miniatures. They really are a joyful lot of ugly rotters, and right now, until my current stock is gone, you can get 15% off with the code GETBALLS. That's GETBALLS, all in capitals. Get balls. My previous iterations of Bull Monsters as a game have been quite wargamey because I wanted it to feel accessible. And I thought that an A2 poster as a playing surface was a quick, cheap, and easy way to get into wargaming. But I wanted there to be room for error, so I skipped over the grid option and went straight to tape measures. I've now concluded that this was a mistake. I've come up with some new ideas, and one of these does away with the tape measures and makes the game more board gamey. Problem with this, though, is that the current bar for miniatures board games is being set unachievably high by the likes of Come On and Steamforged Games. There's no way I have the resources to deliver an out-of-the-box board game experience. Money, as they say, follows money, and to tap into the kind of markets that raise $1 million plus on Kickstarter, you need a seed fund for marketing, art, and more marketing that's simply out of the reach of one-person startups like Precinct Omega. Miniatures war games, on the other hand, will rarely, if ever, enjoy that kind of revenue. But they are a lot easier to get off the ground, especially if you already have the miniatures, which I do. So, I'm going to put my ideas to board game the Bull Monsters firmly to one side. Maybe one day I can come back to it. But for now, I think it's important to grow my IP within the resources of my business. Come On sales may look impressive and their revenue is climbing steadily, but they are also one of the few games companies to be publicly listed, and their share price has been falling equally steadily, while their debt to cash ratio has been going steadily in the wrong direction at much the same rate. Now, I'm not saying they're in trouble, but they certainly aren't as financially secure as you might expect from a company that just raised $3.8 million in pre-sales. Now, I'm not saying I'll never take out a loan for Precinct Omega to do something big and exciting. But it's definitely not time for me to do that just yet. So if you want to get more on what I'm going to be doing with Bull Monsters, as well as follow the other development projects and plans at Precinct Omega, do consider backing the Patreon campaign from only $2 a month. As well as behind-the-scenes previews, discussion and general randomness, it really is a way to follow and contribute to Precinct Omega's gradual journey to, hopefully, growing success. But enough about me. Thank you for listening, and I'll speak to you again next week.
The Precinct Omega Weekly Miniatures News Podcast is supported by our patrons on Patreon. Go to patreon.com/Precinct Omega to support the Patreon, developing new miniatures games and creating hobby content for war games miniatures enthusiasts all over the world.